Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What I had to grow in is to become comfortable with those emotions, because I wasn't comfortable with them in myself, I wouldn't allow myself to feel them. And because I wouldn't feel them, I would keep getting stuck in places that God wanted to free me.
It's about time, because we're going there.
Well, friends, it's about that time to go there. And this week, I'm so excited. Well, okay, I have to confess. I'm just realizing that I say I'm so excited with every episode because, well, I am so excited with every episode. I want to take a moment and just say thank you. Thank you, dear podcast listener, for listening. Every once in a while, I'm sent updates or reviews from producer Madi on who's listening. And it just is such an honor and such a privilege that I get to spend time and hang out in your ears. Yeah, that sounds weird, but it's the most precious space in our entire body. The space in between our ears is our minds. And I get to have a conversation with you, and I'm grateful for you. So thank you for tuning in. On today's episode, and yes, I'm excited for it, I get to have a conversation with my friend, Jenny Allen. I'm actually going to pull back some of our relational layers and maybe tell on ourselves a little bit. About 10 years ago, we went on this crazy adventure of having a dream to gather people in a space and place where they get to encounter God. And all these years later, Jenny is still pioneering and still leading, and in many cases, still doing it afraid. I'm inviting you to get comfortable, listen to this conversation, and really take mental note on what you could apply from Jenny's life into your life. It's an adventure, friends, and I'm so glad that we get to do it together. I hope you enjoy this week's episode. Jenny Allen, I am so excited to have you back on the podcast.
It is always fun to hang out with my good friend. I love being here.
Okay, I've said this so many times before, but I think the listeners now know this. I love when I get to have people that I legit know in real life on the show, because there's this natural like chemistry that happens. And as I was preparing for this interview, this is the second time you've been on the show. And I'm excited because I know that this one's going to be even better than the last one. And the reason why is because I just have seen you on this massive journey. And I believe that someone listening is going to be like, wait a minute, if there's that God-sized dream in Jenny that God has exploded, I wonder what he can do in my life. And this is not a comparison game. This is like a hope game. This is like, it makes me excited. And so can I brag on God, and can I just like unpack a little bit of your life? Can I put you on blast?
I love it. I can't wait to hear.
Okay. So we had met like in passing. This was like, gosh, 15 years ago, right?
Right. But I was going to say, it's more than 10. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was preparing for this. I was like, wait a minute. Let me go back down memory lane, which is really hard because I'm still 29. So I don't know how we're here.
Right. I don't know how. We were 12.
Oh, totally. Totally. Okay. But then we got to spend time together in Austin, Texas. And it was kind of like this think tank. There was a group of women that descended into this day spa in Austin, outside of Austin, Texas. And you were talking about this big vision that you believe that God had given you. And you were inviting different women from different backgrounds and different places and spaces to come and speak into this and believe with you. Jenny, last weekend, I stood in Dickies Arena with thousands and thousands of women in the building and hundreds of thousands of women online around the world. And I want to just affirm how big our God is. And I want to affirm your obedience to him.
Mm.
So I don't want to talk about like this right now moment, because everyone's going to look at you and be like, well, yeah, it's Jenny Allen. But I want to go back to.
Oh, the scared little girl.
The scared little girl.
Do you remember spinning the eyebrows? Do you remember? That's right. My eyebrows have gotten way better. I want you to think about when you were at my house and you spent the night.
Yes.
And I remember so vividly, I think I was sitting on my couch and you were sitting on the floor, and we were about to go to that little weekend, and I was scared out of my mind. I think it's the only, there were only two times in my life I've taken a Xanax. And one of them was that night that I'm talking about, that you were there. And we were about to go, I think, or maybe we just finished. I can't remember, but I was so scared. I was so scared, B. And so I did it scared, but you said something to me that night that
I remember
so factual to the very end, like, not the end, because if is not over, y'all, but to the very final, like, last gathering that we just had together, which was year 10, you said, I'll be an Aaron. I got your arms. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to hold you up. And I felt like, I mean, B, you have been at every single if. You have been the most faithful, easy friend to me. You have believed in it when I didn't. You have believed in me when I didn't. You just have been a force. And you spoke it that night. And I will never get over it.
Okay. So now I'm going to tell on you. This is a very beautiful moment. You're making me look good. But like, let us not forget that I called you a Gideon. Do you remember they said that you're being cowardly? I remember Anne Voskamp was there. She could attest to this. Yep. I remember looking at you like, Jenny, you've got this. You're being Gideon. We've thrown the fleeces. And I started chirping you at you. Oh, yeah,
I was. You've been preaching at me for 10 years or more. Yeah, you've been preaching at me. You've been helping me. You've been fighting for me. Yeah, let's be real.
Nagging you was the right word.
my non-charismatic background needed a little Bianca in my life.
And that hilarious.
You have changed me, friend. I'm very grateful for you. But no, I mean, we were all so young and we could record hours and hours of a podcast just of all we've been through since then. I mean, just all the things that we've both faced and been through and church plants and our church plant, you know, turning it over and adoption for me and all the things. We could go on and on. But I do think there's no replacing friends that you've known for 10 years and that have fought for you behind the scenes and helped you believe God more. There's no replacing you, B. I'm so grateful for you.
Well, I'm grateful for this conversation. And I want someone who's listening right now, the reason why I told that story, I have no intention of making you look bad. This is actually going to make God look really good.
Yeah.
You said it earlier, and I'm just going to repeat it again. You did it afraid. So I want to go back to the living room. Because there are people listening to this podcast.
That's right.
Who they have God-sized dreams. They may not say or have the language like God told me or I know I have to do this, but it's I call it a holy hunch. It's this feeling they can't fake, they can't squash it. And so I remember God giving you this really big dream. And to be honest with you, it sounded astronomical to me at the time. But I'm like, hey, God didn't give that to me. So Jenny, I'm going to support you.
I think a lot of people were not jealous of me behind the scenes because it was heavy. It was hard.
Okay. So this is where I want to start. I know that it might feel tiresome to you because you've told this story to so many other people, but for people that are just listening in and maybe they are familiar with some of your recent books or familiar with If Gathering, I don't want to talk about those accolades right now. I want to talk about when did God speak to you? What did he say? Because we're living in the fruit of it now, but I want the seed.
Yeah, that's good.
Let's go to the seed. Tell me about that moment.
Go back to my 30th birthday. It was the night of my 30th birthday, so I was still 29. And I was going to sleep and I woke up and in the middle of the night and I was awake. And I remember God giving me the words, disciple generation. And I knew they were from God because you got to understand, this is before social media has blown up. Mm-hmm. This is before blogging and all those things existed. So what a joke if I thought of that. Like how would I was a stay-at-home mom with three babies. Like, how on earth would I have decided? I would have even – those words would have never crossed my brain, but it was crystal clear. And I remember feeling it in my bones. Like, I had dinner the next night with friends, and I remember weeping at dinner and just saying, I don't know what to do with this, but I know it was not something I thought of. This is something that I feel like came from God. But what's the girl supposed to do with that statement? And it was so sweet. They said, Jenny, if this is from God, then he's going to accomplish it. Mm-hmm. And that was enough for me to just forget about it and put it on a shelf. And then it would be years later that I would be at a publishing meeting and realize, oh my gosh, I'm about to have the ability to write books and to write Bible studies for the world. And then they very quickly put me on the stage at Catalyst and the stage at Women of Faith. And so all of a sudden, I had all of that opportunity. But there was still something in me that was echoing a whole generation. And I'm thinking, man, I'm just a white girl in America. I don't think I can do this alone. This is going to take all of us. And so I remember just one by one telling y'all, like, I think we're supposed to do something together. I think it's bigger than any one of us. I think we're supposed to come together and try to reach the world. And it was a hunch. It really was. I think that's a good word for it, B. It was a hunch. And I just kept telling people and they kept saying yes. And then, and we didn't know what we were doing. I never run an organization. I hired one person, Jessica Taylor, to help. And it was just, it was a miracle. Like there were a million little things that we had to figure out along the way. And it was, you know, we hired interns. We found out later it was illegal to have unpaid interns, but we couldn't pay them. So they were serving, things like that. We almost, you know, somebody had all of our money and they didn't release it. We couldn't pay our vendors. Like, this is the mess of starting everything. So it was not easy, but God was in it and I felt him in it and I felt his favor and his protection. But there still were a million roadblocks and struggles that made it incredibly hard. And I'm so glad it was hard because it built me into a tough girl. Like some type people, like I think you probably came into the world really tough.
No, everyone thinks that. I don't know why people think that. And I'm like, I'm really Gideon. That's a whole other podcast for another day. Yep. Hey, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm going to do. You're very, not self-deprecating, but you walk with a lot of humility. And I keep on going back to this act of obedience, this act of obedience.
Yeah.
I think the reason why the Lord trusts you with such big things is because he'll know in foolishness or in faith, you will say yes.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about a shift that I've seen in the last 15 years of our friendship, but I'm going to say it's a solid decade. So let's just use if as a
sure.
A marker, because we just celebrated a decade of IF Gathering, which for those that don't know, is a global gathering where the Bible is preached, Jesus is exalted, people are mobilized, and resources are given. So 10 years, I have just seen a massive shift in you. And I'm going to whittle down whether it's your Bible studies, whether it's your books, whether it's your podcast, whether it's leading IF Gathering. At the core of all those, it's your heart for revival. Because before there was a platform at IF, you were gathering young women in your living room and, you know, fumbling through the pages of the Bible, trying to teach and disciple people. At the core, it's your heart for revival.
Yeah. I saw an article recently and it called me, it said it was something like a revivalist. And I was like, huh. It's like, well, it's not unfitting. I mean, it isn't. You're not wrong. Like, I will say, If there's anything I crave, if there's anything I want to see, it is that our hearts would be revived for the Lord. Mm. One thing, I'm very comfortable with unbelievers. Some of my happiest days of ministry were living in the Pi Beta Phi house at University of Arkansas, sitting outside at the smoking table with all the girls and driving them around, picking them up after parties. Like that, those were some of my favorite days of ministry. I'm very comfortable in, you know, places where people are not following God at all. I think the place of discomfort for me, the place where I literally cannot stomach it, is dead faith. I don't understand it. I literally don't have a category for it. Because when I met Jesus, I was so floored. I would literally walk around at school talking about him all the time. I was like, do you understand what he did for us? Do you understand what the gospel is? Like, you've got to hear this. Like, you're not going to believe it. And it's kind of never changed for me, you know? So I totally agree with you. And I think what's fun. Now, there are seasons that we've both lived through where it feels like the soil is hard and that dead faith is hard to awaken. And it is hard to bring forth. You just, not that we ever could, but you're doing the work the same way. You're not doing the work that differently. It's just, you're doing it the same way, but it's not working and you don't know why. And then there's recent days. And recent days, it has felt like, man, we're doing the same thing we always were. And the fruit is exponential. And so it's fun to be in a moment where it feels like the church is ready for revival. And yet you're right. I love that you said that because I don't think my heart has ever changed. It's always been the same.
If you're anything like me, you might be a little neurotic with your water. And you probably don't trust tap water. That's why you have to check out AquaTrue. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process. And their countertop purifiers work with no installation or plumbing. That was my favorite part. The filters are affordable and long-lasting, so you don't have to change them every 2 to 3 months like the other ones. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. So basically, you're saving the environment from tons of plastic waste, and you get to drink fantastic water. I got mine delivered straight to my house, and it was easy to set up. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes for a great gift.
I know, because I got one for my sister. Today, my listeners receive 20% off of any AquaTru purifier. Just go to AquaTru.com. That's AquaTru.com and enter the code WGT at checkout. That's 20% off of any AquaTru water purifier when you go to AquaTru.com and use the promo code WGT.
So this is one thing that I think, and this is, we did not discuss this prior to the interview, but one of the things that I think has been a leap pad, one of the things that I think has catapulted you is you've really fought hard for emotional intelligence and spiritual maturity. Mm. And you recently wrote a new book, Untangle Your Emotions. And one thing that I could attest to is that when you write about it, you have to go through it. It can't just be something that you're pontificating over. It has to be a lived action if it's going to germinate in the hearts of other people. And I see that. And so one of the things that I think has been so beautiful to watch is in you processing your life, your pain, the successes, the losses, the wins, the transitions, it's you really learning how to manage your emotions. And I, again, I love you. You have this quote, feelings aren't meant to be fixed. They are meant to be felt. What I love is that I think I've always had leadership synonymous with being non-emotive, leadership being synonymous with thinking, not feeling. I've always been told I'm so emotional. My family says that my emotions have emotions, and they do, okay? But I think that's what makes us connect with people is our ability to feel. And so if you, let's say that you're a revivalist out of control with their emotions, I think that you would call fire and brimstone down. And like Elisha, you have kids right. mauled by a bear, you know? So right. I'm just really proud of this. But I think one of the things that I'm just excited about in this season is this language and handles for people learning to deal with their emotions. So in the rest of our conversation, I want us to unpack where did this start from? Like clearly you wrote this out of a passion and not just because you're trying to make some bestseller list. Talk to me about that broken girl with a big vision, that broken girl that sees revival. Yeah. Like that's where I want to tell on ourselves.
Yeah. I was always scared of my emotions. I think they did feel dangerous to me and they felt that they didn't feel helpful. They felt, I didn't want to feel sad. I didn't want to feel angry. I didn't want to feel those things. And so I would push them away. The problem was they were piling up inside of me and they were coming out in anxious ways and in ways that were distracting to myself and probably to others. And so, you know, one of the things Zach said about the book when he read it, he said, Jenny, you're calling people to wholeheartedness. And I liked that word. I hadn't used that word a lot. I actually went back and put it in a few times because I liked it after he said it. And I thought, well, gosh, wholeheartedness, like what would be the opposite of that? And it would be a divided heart. And I think for a lot of us, as we won't feel sadness or anger or fear because we have judged it, because we think it's dangerous, then it's storing up for inside of us and we aren't able to bring our whole heart to something because part of it is locked up and we can't access it because we don't want to or because we think it's bad to. And so what I had to grow in is to become comfortable with those emotions because I wasn't comfortable with them in myself, I wouldn't allow myself to feel them. And because I wouldn't feel them, I would keep getting stuck in places that God wanted to free me, but I couldn't get free and I didn't know why. And because I wouldn't be comfortable with those emotions, I wasn't comfortable with other people's emotions. So when my kids brought home sadness from their day, I didn't know what to do with it. So I would try to fix it. I would be like, don't feel that way. Or no, we have so much to be thankful for. Like I would play that game of just trying to make them not feel it when the reality is God gifted us emotions to help us navigate a really broken world. So I had to learn that through hurting and having people try to fix me and realizing how bad that feels and going, oh gosh, that doesn't work. And then when I felt people mourn with me and be sad with me, it healed something in me and it made me realize, man, this actually works, right? It's not some pie in the sky, you should do this because it's the better way or it's nice to be this way and it makes people feel better. That wasn't enough for me. I needed to know it actually helped heal you. It actually helped set you free. And that happened to me and I was set free. And now I'm like this crusader. I'm like, this is so important. And there's a crusade in me to like fix the theology of the church because largely the theology has been emotions are dangerous and negative. And so I hope that this plays a part in just bringing at least the conversation up, which is why have we demonized these things that are gifts from God?
So as a church leader, in a lot of the conversations that I'm having, whether online or in person, there, and it could be a cultural malaise, because given the last 4 years that we've gone through, we've felt the gamut of emotions. But the number one thing that I'm hearing from people is that they're just numb. Like they just can't feel anymore.
Yeah.
And it's not, I'm not saying that with judgment, because I have found myself in the last couple of years feeling the same way.
Me too.
It's like, I just have to survive, or, you know, numb out. It's an extra Netflix show. It's an extra glass of wine, or whatever that people's coping mechanisms are, an extra purchase on Amazon, going to Target, an extra time during the week. So are you seeing a numbness? And if so, where is that coming from?
Well, that was what it was for me. And it was right around your, or the first year out of quarantine, where I just, I mean, I didn't want to keep working. I was pretty discouraged and apathetic. And it scared me, because I knew that that wasn't what God wanted for me, but I didn't know how to change it. And I didn't know what to do about it. And this is when I found this little cohort of people where the goal was to show up with all your feelings. And that scared me, because partly because I'd been numb, and that had, while I didn't want to stay there and I knew I didn't want to live there, it was effective for a little while. You know, it was serving a purpose for a minute, and that's okay. And I have so much compassion for everyone wherever they are, because I've been all of the places. I've been the fixer that doesn't feel, I've been the one that feels too much. I've been the one that numbs. I've been the one that copes. I've been the one that tries to control my emotions. I've been the one that hurts her kids because I don't do it right. You know, so I'm everyone in the story. And so I have so much grace for everyone in this. But for me, I knew I needed to pay attention, and I needed to heal something, but I didn't know what to heal. If I look back, I didn't know what was wrong. I didn't know why I was there. And there's the obvious reasons, but I don't think it's the obvious reasons. What I talk about COVID being is like the lake drained and everybody could see what was at the bottom of the lake. I don't think we were extra depressed because we were at home, or extra afraid because of the news. I think it's just that we lost all our coping mechanisms, and the lake's drained, and we were like, ooh, I've got some mess. And I don't know whether or how to clean it up, but I think that's what that season did for all of us. And I think that's where I was when I entered that cohort, was just, I see there's broken things that need healing, but I don't know how to heal them. And I don't even know how they got in the bottom of my lake, but I see them now and I would like to heal them, but I don't know how. And I think that was the beginning for me of being honest and not, and saying, I'm going to pay attention, and I'm going to bring some embarrassing things into the light, to my friends and to a counselor. And it wasn't the big things. I mean, I could tell you more juicy things than what this was, but it was embarrassing to me that I was so uncomfortable in the places God had put me. And I was tired of feeling that way. And I just wanted, I wanted it to be easier. And so the road to that was feeling a lot of things that I needed to feel, and to feel them in community, to feel them with people that empathized with me. And it really, Bianca, it was like magic. And I call it magic because I don't know what else to call it. Spiritual magic, right? It's Jesus magic, but it's magic. When you do something as basic as cry over something that happened to you when you were 12 years old, that you think, I mean, literally, if I told you the story, you'd be like, and that's all? Like, that was what was making you feel that way? Okay. You cry about that story, and other people cry with you, and they don't fix you. They give you no perspective. They give you no biblical sound theology. They just listen, and they are sad with you. And then the next time you go to do something, you don't feel anxiety. And I'm running back to my counselor and saying, why was I not triggered? I should, of any moment in my ministry career, I should feel more pressure in this moment than I've ever felt. Why am I not feeling it? And he said, because you don't feel alone anymore. You don't feel alone in your pain. It's like, that is some kind of weird voodoo magic. Look at why it works. does not add up in my brain. But what I did is I looked at all the science, and the science explains what God says in scripture, like mourn with those who mourn, and blessed mm-hmm. are those who mourn because they shall be comforted by God. The thing about scripture, all of those scriptures, and then Jesus weeping with Mary, even though he knows he's going to heal and fix the problem. All of that made sense in light of the science I was seeing, where people's brains actually heal when they don't feel alone in their pain. And so that was all convincing to me. And then I was experiencing it and I was realizing I'm healing, like I'm changing in ways that I'd never experienced before.
I want to go back a few. I didn't want to stop you because this is great, but you had mentioned the cohort. Now I'm familiar with it, but for everyone who's listening right now, speak to us and let us know how you found the cohort. And then I want you to speak to the person that's just like, the idea of confessing my true emotions right now just feels absolutely anathema. I do not want to do it. And then, and I'm going to let you just go on a rant because I think that they go together, but the cohort, the power of the cohort and the power of confession. You're big on this. Ever since I've known you, you have seen the power of confession. And what you just said was you gathered in community and you confessed the truth and you found healing. Did I hear you correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So walk us through, like, how'd you find that?
Nobody fixed my problem, y'all.
Go figure. Go figure. Wow.
Go figure. Something shifted in me, literally, physically, and emotionally shifted in me. So the cohort was, I was invited to by a friend, Jessica Honegger, who you know, and
yeah,
it was just a few leaders. And the goal was, okay, we're all in leadership. We're all working hard. Let's just come together and really share our lives and heart and do it once a month. It was not even a huge commitment, but it was for me because I knew I'd have to show up emotionally and I wasn't great at that. But I would say anybody can have this. All it is a really strong, a small group that goes there, that isn't afraid to really go there, to go, okay, not just what circumstances are happening in your life, but how do you feel about the circumstances? And what is your stuck place that you don't even have words for yet, but we're going to help you put words to it? I would say that has happened over and over again, is I've gone in with a feeling and in something that feels unbelievably small yet represents my emotional reaction to it is very big. And so it's representing a stronghold or something that has grown in my life over time. And so they've helped me work through all of that. But I would just say all we do, and this is transferable to anyone, you can get some friends to commit, but you have to commit to go there to say everything. And if you do that, then, you know, the two questions that we are typically answering for each other is, what are you grieving and what are you longing for? And we each kind of share that for about 15 or 20 minutes. And then after someone shares, all we do in response is we say, that makes me feel blank. That makes me feel proud of you because of blank. That makes me feel angry because that wasn't fair. And I'm just so sorry that that happened to you. That makes me feel sad. That's all we do. Again, it's magic. And so I think it doesn't make sense on paper, but it does when you've experienced it. So what I would say to anyone that's afraid of that or thinks, I don't have that, I can't have that, you have to create it. We can't be people that wait for to be asked into the group. You have to create it. And I've had to create this in other ways in my life, for sure. And so I think there's, you know, you can be a victim about it, or you can say, you know, I'm just going to ask and I'm just going to see if anybody would want to do this with me and go deeply in together. And I think some people would ask, well, then how is this Christian? Like, how is this gospel centered and all of that? And I would say the gospel is more than an idea. The gospel is something that if you are a believer, you have experienced, right? Like you have experienced the saving grace of God, the power of God in your life. It is a relationship and it is an experience. And so again, that does not determine our salvation, your relationship level, your experience with it. But you cannot tell me that the gospel is an idea or a fact. Like it is that, but it is so much more than that. And so what we do together is experience the gospel. We experience grace. We experience compassion. We experience God's love for us through people, through fallible people. We've certainly gotten in fights, but through people. And so what confession does is it opens up your need for God. It's your honest, I was just looking for this quote. I really want to find it. It's by Eugene Peterson, and I used it in the book. And it really was, I wish I had written a great quote to summarize my whole book, but I had to get it from Eugene Peterson. But it is, and it just is so worth finding. Hold on. And I don't often share it, but it feels fitting for this right here. Oh, I was looking too far. Okay, page 198. This is what it says. The aim of the person of faith is to live as deeply and thoroughly as possible, with all of our hearts, wholehearted, and to deal with the reality of life. And I think that's where confession comes in, to deal with the reality of our lives, to discover truth, to create beauty, and to act out of love. That to me is the best definition I found of a wholehearted person, that we live with all of our hearts deeply and thoroughly, and we deal with the reality of life. And that is what confessional community forced me to do. We can live wholeheartedly, seemingly, and we can create, and we can love, and we can have secrets, and we can have parts of us that we never share with anyone. And it is a denial. It is really living a lie. Mm-hmm. And God calls us out of that. And you see that most obviously when Jesus is at the woman with the woman at the well, that it wasn't as simple as giving her an idea. I am the way, I am the resurrection, I am the truth. He could have just said that, but he didn't. He went to her story and he found the places she was embarrassed to say, and she found the things she was feeling shame about. He went to those places and she tried to get her to say it. She wouldn't say it. And then when she wouldn't say it, he said it, which would feel mean in 99.9% of situations, but it wasn't mean because he wanted to heal her and he wanted to set her free. And that's where he wants to work with what is known, and he knows it all. But do we, like, do we know what we're really feeling, the griefs, the anger we might feel towards God that we have never admitted out loud, the fear that we feel about the future? Have we ever told anybody that? Have we ever told anybody the sin that we've committed 15 years ago that still haunts us, that the abortion that we had that we never will say out loud? Like, have we really said it all? And if we say it all, not to everybody, but to someone safe, to a few people that are safe, and we see that God, the gospel is enough for it, huh, now I'm experiencing the gospel. So Romans 8:1, there is therefore now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. Now I embody that, not because I could have by myself reading my Bible, although maybe I could have mentally understood it, but because someone is crying, looking and listening to my sin and nodding and loving me anyway. And something about that moment, I see the grace and the compassion and the love of God, and it changes me. Yes.
Jenny, we are round back up to where we began. I have studied the Welch Revival and the Jesus Revival that happened here in Orange County in the 60s and 70s. And it broke out because of confession, a repentance of where the truth, just the true reality of where we are and our deep need for Jesus.
Right.
And I see you living this out. Mm. And so I get to say 10 years later, in a sheer act of obedience and the commitment to confession, that revival is starting and growing. People are saying, when's revival happening? I'm like, it's happening.
Oh, it's now. Happening.
It's happening now on college campuses and our churches. And thank you for being a voice and someone who is pushing and advocating for this honest, this wholehearted living. For people that want more information about the book, Untangle Your Emotions, there's going to be a link to Amazon as well as to your website, as well as social media where they can get more information about this book and your previous books, because you've been on this podcast before. Everything that you write is profound in new ways for people to understand complex issues in a very simple way. So I want to say thank you for your time. Thank you for being on the
show.
Love
you, friend.
I love you, and I'm wishing you many blessings in this next season. Continue confessing and then hold me accountable to that too, because I'm Enneagram 7 who doesn't like to sit with like negative emotions. So this is really hard for me.
With you, girl. To this.
I know you are. That's why I'm like, well, Jenny's doing it. I can too.
Let's do it. I love you, friend. We'll talk soon.
I love you. Thank you, friend. The fact that I get to have conversations with friends and get to introduce my podcast friends to them is a gift. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and if it has touched you, if you've learned something from it, hey, share the wealth. It's always encouraging to know that this podcast is not landing on deaf ears. It's always a gift to know that the words aren't wasted. And so consider tagging at Jenny Allen and at Bianca Oltoff with what you are learning through this podcast, what's applied to you, or what you're going to apply to your everyday life. Until next time, friends, I love you and I'm grateful for you.